The Farming Programme with Arroquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
We've had cereals, groundswell and Lincolnshire in the last few weeks. Next comes the Great Yorkshire Show.
On the showground, every piece has been upgraded. There's one particular piece that I am really looking forward to seeing, and it's in the food hall, and it sounds quite scary, but it's the Battle of Butchers competition.
We've got some interesting things made from wool to talk about, and I visited a Lincolnshire farm growing grass for turf.
This isn't quite a year old yet, so 12 months just over plus to lift it. Depends on what we have to do to it, soil type and the season.
Plus timely agronomy advice, crop, livestock and grey market reports, the week's weather and a new way to listen.
The Week in Agriculture. This is The Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Hello, hope you've had a good week. Plenty of sunshine and more to come later this week. And I'll tell you about Rayo, the new way to listen to The Farming Programme later. This is The Farming Programme podcast for Sunday, 30th of June. I'm Steve Orchard. In the news this week, a new pilot scheme is being offered to sugar beet growers by NFU Energy, NFU Sugar and Nestle to help you access incentive payments for environmental services on farm. It aims to allow manufacturers of goods containing homegrown sugar to invest directly in the environmental sustainability of their raw materials. The pilot's first step will offer growers who've drilled sugar beet with nitrogen placement in 2024 an incentive payment of £28 a hectare from Nestle, which wants to source lower carbon sugar. To qualify, you need to register with NFU Energy. Three major farm carbon calculator companies have agreed to work together to harmonise their methodologies used in calculating emissions. Farm Carbon Cutting Toolkit, Cool Farm Alliance and AgriCalc will remain independent and other calculators can join the coalition, but they will all provide transparency to understand why different calculators produce different answers. Applications are now open for new hen housing grants available to laying hen and pullet farmers in England with flocks of 1,000 birds or more. The money can be used for two different types of projects: funding a veranda on an existing building and replacing or refurbishing existing housing. There's new support from DEFRA to help livestock farmers tackle two diseases, PRRS and BVD. Pig producers can receive £923 to undergo more in-depth testing for PRRS, and various payment rates are available for BVD depending on the breed of animal and whether or not BVD is present in the herd. And today's the last day for entries to the British Farming Awards. It's a busy time of year for agricultural shows, isn't it? I was at Groundswell the other day. A couple of interesting bits to talk about next week on the programme. Next up, it's the Great Yorkshire Show, and the last one for show director Charles Mills. Charles, like so many agricultural and county shows, there is a long and proud history, isn't there?
It is, yeah. 165 years, it's an awful lot of shows, isn't it? But it used to rotate round the county to the extremes, north, south, east and west. And didn't come back to Harrogate till about 1950 as a permanent showground. And there it's remained ever since, which it's, for those of you that haven't been, it's the most beautiful showground you would ever wish to see.
Almost as good as Lincolnshire Showground. Not that I'm biased in any way, but it is a big show because you managed to do this over 4 days, whereas most shows are one or two, really, aren't they?
Well, yeah, we do 4 days, and that was brought on us by COVID, because those of you remember that dreadful period of time, COVID presented us very difficult circumstances how we would deliver a Great Yorkshire Show. So we extended it to 4 days, limited the number of people, and that actually led us to seeing how much more people were enjoying it. Our customers coming were enjoying the experience, because it wasn't a rugby scrum anymore. There was more space on the showground, easy to park cars, and so we extended to 4 days and limiting the number of visitors to now currently 35,000 per day. COVID was awful for us all, but at that particular thing, there's always something good comes out of something bad, in my view, and that was one of them.
Well, as they say, every cloud and all that. So give us a quick potted summary of what we've got. There's loads of trade stands, competition, usual livestock and horses. What have we got at the show this year?
Yeah, I suppose you mentioned livestock there, and I was a cattle steward before I took the role of show director, and this year we have the World Ayrshire Conference, and I'm delighted about that, because the breed I used to steward was Ayrshires. So it's wonderful on my last show that they're bringing their World Conference to us. Our main ring attraction this time is an interesting guy called Paul Hammond, who's going to do incredible things on quad bikes. Not something that any of you, I suggest, try at home, but I think it'd be highly exciting, and I'm very much looking forward to that. We have a change of singers this time. We have the four tenors singing in our main ring, which will be lovely to see, and they're going to put on some pretty special numbers. You know, wherever we go on the showground, every piece has been upgraded. There's one particular piece that is very new, and I am really looking forward to seeing, and it's in the food hall, and it sounds quite scary, but it's the Battle of Butchers competition. And it's where the nine butchers are going to compete to deliver a dish in six different ways. So I think that will be something really worth watching, and I'm looking forward to seeing that. As long as nobody takes a cleaver to me, I'll be fine.
So we've got butchers with cleavers in hand. We've got a man doing all sorts of strange things in a quad bike, and people climbing up poles as well.
Yeah. They did suggest I should do it when it was my last show, but I've passed on that idea. Our climbing poles came back last year, and they are a great attraction. The forestry section is a wonderful piece, and forestry is increasingly becoming more important in the countryside. So it's a great place to go and see.
Absolutely. And of course, we've got a lot of innovation at the show. You actually got an innovation zone, haven't you?
Yeah, and that came last year for our first time, but again has been upgraded. Agriculture and the countryside is changing and will continue to change massively, and in that area we are demonstrating and giving explanation and talks to some of those changes. So it's a good area to go and see down near the sheep area.
Yeah, and I noticed a self-propelled potato harvester, one of the attractions there. That'll be interesting for Lincolnshire.
Yeah, well, I'm sure some of your Lincolnshire potato growers will know our president, Martin Cockerell, this time. So the president always has the privilege of sort of having something that sort of he fancies on the show, on the president's lawn. So this great big expensive machine that most of us can't afford to buy will be parked there. So go and have a look.
So we've got lots of exhibitors, we've got lots of competitions, and you've got quite a few speakers, talks, people on the Great Yorkshire Show stage, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got celebrities, Helen Skelton, Adam Henson, Peter Wright and the Cannon Hall brothers on the stage. They are very much giving talks on every day on different subjects. Adam, in particular, will be going around the show. I know he's going to be involved in our sheepdog area, which will be quite an exciting one. We did sort of hope to get lots of political people there, MPs, but the Prime Minister called the election at quite a challenging time for us. But we are still hoping that we will get some MPs, and perhaps we may well get some exciting news on agriculture announced. We're just fingers crossed on that, but it's early days from that point of view.
And of course, the show, like all these shows, is not just for farmers, is it? There's plenty for the non-farmer to do.
There is so much on that showground. You really can't do it in a day. There's something for everybody. I perhaps didn't realise exactly, it's taken me 9 years to get to this point, to realise what every little bit of it is, but there is something there for everyone. And really, it's a total celebration of agriculture and the countryside at its best. But there are just so many things. You can go and do your Christmas shopping there, birthday presents, fun rides, whatever you want to do. There is something to make a really exciting full day.
And as you say, such a lot to do there. And for farmers particularly, there's an awful lot going on around the showground, and you could potentially miss something. So you've published a guide this year.
Yeah, we published a guide. I'm a bit old-fashioned, I'm sorry, but but these guides are great if you know how to use them. And I'm getting to that age where I don't know how to use these sort of guides, but most people will know how to use the guides. But you mentioned farmers there. It's been a tough old year for everybody, but especially in agriculture with the weather as it is. And the Great Yorkshire is something where farmers and people that have had a tough year can go and meet friends and just enjoy the gathering, being together, you know, opportunity to celebrate. But the guide, yeah, gives you a far better way to get round the showground, and if you have a particular thing you want to see, you can find out quite easily from that.
And it is actually quite easy to use. I downloaded it yesterday and had a good look, and I'm an old person like you, Charles, so I don't go for apps and stuff like that all that much, but it is a very useful guide, and all you need to know is on there. Now then, you've talked a couple of times about 9 years, and you're not going to get to double figures. It's your last show this year. We're not going to do this again next year, you and I.
Well, we're not, Steve, but nothing stays the same. There's an element of sadness there for me, but I just think, you shouldn't stay around too long, and I think it's important that somebody else gets the opportunity to have a go. It's not about 9 or 10. I was actually only going to do 6, so they've got 3 extra years out of me anyway.
But I'm sure you're not going to be totally retiring, though.
And we'll step very much away for the time being. I think that's important. But I wish Rachel all the best with it. It's the most humbling experience you could ever undergo. I have loved it from start to finish and made so many wonderful friends and met so many wonderful people. And meeting the people is the bit that really is important to me and has been important to me. So I thank everybody that has come to the show and everybody that stopped and chatted. And I thank all the media. You have been wonderful to me. And I can only say thank you to everybody that's taken part in the last 9 years of my life.
Well, you've made it a wonderful show. You've continued the tradition from previous years, but enhanced the show and made it even better and coped with things like COVID. Charles, we wish you all the very best and look forward to seeing you at next week's Great Yorkshire Show.
Thank you, Steve. We look forward to it and hope we've got rid of our colds.
Thanks, Charles.
Okay, thank you.
Tuesday the 9th to Friday the 12th of July at Harrogate. If you're going, let me know. I'll be there on the Wednesday. Walking around various shows recently, it never ceases to amaze me the inventiveness of farmers and the flexibility, the adaptability of the products that you grow. At Lincolnshire Show in the NFU tent were a couple of tables covered with wool, but not jumpers or skirts. County Advisor Rhonda Thompson, do you want to just talk us through what we've got here?
We've got dog leads, we've got rope made from wool. We've got these lovely little decorative baskets, and the lady that has this company, Kate Drury, also works with another company in Wales, and they do willow and wool baskets, which is stunning.
So let's just get to the heart of this. These are all principally made
from
wool. And you've got a bit of a bike.
Yes,
How does that work?
Of a bike. That came from a company in Sleaford. This is made from carbon fibre. It has been reinforced with flax, and the idea of that is, if this is in an accident or breaks or whatever, instead of shattering into lots of tiny sharp pieces, it will just crack. And any bits that come off won't be sharp and it will just be broken. That takes enormous pressure. I've seen that in a vise, and it is quite staggering. We've also got a product that's been sent to us from a farm in Yorkshire. It's something called the Ahi flower, and they do human supplements, and they call it regenerative omegas. You also can get nutrition for animals. They also do additives that can go into food and drink as well, so that people are getting the necessary supplements to supplement their diet.
And they're moving over this side. You know, when we grow trees, where we plant saplings on farm or wherever, they've often got a little sort of surround to them to protect
them guard.
Against vehicles and animals and so on. We've got one here. You're not going to tell me that's made out of wool.
It is made out of wool, Steve. This is made from wool. It is completely biodegradable, and I would much rather see this along our roads in Lincolnshire rather than those plastic guards, which have to be
Like a plastic one,
it looks
I have
like
to
plastic,
say, but that will
but
biodegrade
it,
eventually.
It is totally biodegradable. The wool has been combined with another product which will make it completely biodegradable. We've got fleeces, we've got insulation, lots of stuff that you'd probably normally see. You wouldn't necessarily see the wool, the tree guards, and you wouldn't see these little beauties. These are my favourites. These are laundry balls, and they're made from wool.
What are laundry balls?
Like, what do you mean? Clearly, you don't do the laundry, right?
So I do the laundry, but I've never put laundry balls in.
When you tumble dry items like towels, and you
I don't have a tumble dryer.
If you put your towels in the tumble dryer to make them fluffy, you put in these plastic balls that have got spikes on them all over. But now you can put these beautiful little wool sheep in. and they will fluff up the fibres, and then you can dry them and you can use them again.
Little bow sheep.
They are absolutely beautiful. Look, little bow sheep, 100% British wool laundry balls. They are just lovely.
Fantastic. And if you want to know more about the products and the companies that make them, message Rhonda on X or Twitter at RhondaT40. To the fields now and some timely agronomy advice from our crop doctor. Shorts on, Sean Sparling. Morning, Sean.
Yes, morning, Steve. Proper hot and sunny and dry since this time last week, and that's made a massive difference to our crop. Sugar beet has absolutely shot off in the last 7 days. So let's start with beet then. The more forward beet crop's now well beyond the 16-leaf stage when the sugar beet plant becomes very much less susceptible to the transmission of virus from Mises persici. They start losing that susceptibility from about 12 leaves onwards. And so the requirement for regular on your hands and knees aphid monitoring is almost but not quite over. The later drillings and the more backward crops still susceptible, of course. Predator numbers, though, they've increased almost logarithmically, it seems to me, in the last 7 days in my sugar beet, particularly ladybird adults and larvae, which should now be able to keep on top of the aphids, which are still finding their way back into these crops. Black aphids increasing as well in the sugar beet. And we've been finding black aphids at relatively low levels for the past couple of weeks in sugar beet, winter beans, spring beans. But this hot weather has really started an explosion. Spring beans in particular, which I'll come on to. In sugar beet, though, they tend to initially build up on the odd scattered individual plants and can look far, far more serious than they actually are. It's the more distressed backward sugar beet crops that will sometimes benefit from the control of black aphids, but only if more than 10% of plants have significant populations. The threshold in a good, healthy beet crop is 100 black aphids per plant, and only in the worst cases, which could justify treatment. And to be fair, in most cases, the rapidly increasing predator numbers are going to prevent any significant aphid population expansion or significant crop damage. But of course, anything can happen this year in particular, so do be on your guard. But in most seasons, that makes those insecticide applications pretty much unnecessary for black aphids in sugar beet. Make a note, by the way, of any fields that have Conviso Smart Beet in them, and Clearfield Oilseed Rape in them, for that matter, because sulfonyl urea herbicides will not control those volunteers next season. CMPP, MCPA, they're going to do the job, but do make sure you make a note of it all now before you forget. Winter cereals largely done now, and still a lot of life in them and work to do for the winter cereals, of course. Many barely out of flower as yet, but as ever, what the weather does next is going to be crucial. We're going to need a few more drops of rain and plenty of this warm sunshine for the rest of July, and I think then we'll be sitting a lot prettier than we all expected we possibly could be even a couple of months ago. These crops have got plenty of water to fill them, but they really do desperately need that month of sunshine just to finish them off properly. It's been a very diseasey year, and cereal crops really showing the results of that disease pressure. But the fungicides have really done their bit this season. Just go out and look at the misfits in your field and you'll see precisely what I mean. There's plenty of potential out there in these winter wheats, winter barleys. The spring cereals may be a little bit more variable. There's a lack of tillers, lateness of drilling. Some of them have been mauled in. Spring beans as well, mauled in, and they're not looking quite so good. So all of that's going to play a big part this year, but we wait and see. With those rush showing up in the winter beans, like I said last week, but once those pods and the beans in them get to full size, it's really questionable as to whether there's any justification at all for further fungicide treatment once those winter beans get to that stage. Late diseases like rust and chocolate spot actually help us because they'll desiccate the crop for us. So speak to your advisor, and the cutoff timings are going to need looking at very closely if you're planning to go again with a fungicide. Spring bean, rust and chocolate spot moving in those two. But as I said earlier, black aphid locally suddenly way over threshold. Not everywhere, of course, but in many of mine, from Market Raisin to Lincoln and from Newark to Gainsborough and pretty much everywhere in between, they've gone from odd plants with colonies just a week ago to 10 or even 20% of plants colonised within a few days. One plant in 10 with a colony is your threshold. Perimicar, probably the safest non-target species option. And to be fair, really the only choice you have for black bean aphid. It lasts about 7 days with that vapour activity, but very kind to be bees, ladybirds, butterflies, moths, etc. Peas get into the end of flowering now as well. They're getting their final fungicide. Pea moth treatment still ongoing. Pyrethroid's best for that job. Pea aphids increasing too. Perimicar best for that job. And remember, in peas and beans, you've only got one application of perimicar per season, so make it count. And the water volume should be kept above 150 litres for good coverage in these hot conditions. 200 litres is preferable. And they're best sprayed in temperatures of 15 degrees or warmer to get the best out of them. Hot, thundery weather like this, of course, means it's always blight weather. In the spuds, the winged aphids were showing up all over the place in potatoes 2 or 3 weeks ago. So the wingless nymph offspring are now requiring treatment in some places. 5 wingless aphids or more per compound leaf in potatoes, your threshold for treatment, of course. But having said all of that, there's a noticeable fall in aphid numbers over the last 7 days or so in my patch. And the increase in predator numbers is going to be helping there. But do keep monitoring the aphids in case they increase again. Mind you, I think at this stage of the season, with predator numbers increasing at the rate they are, that does seem unlikely. Rate then, moving towards harvest at a rate of knots. But don't assume that just because it looks ready to spray off, it actually is. These crops are bleached in some fields, green in others, but the same stage of senescence within the pods. Seed maturity, incredibly variable in the pods. So go by the middle pods. If the seed in those are mostly brown with a little bit of green, red and a bit of black, then that's your timing. If you go too early, you can lose up to 3/4 of a ton per hectare in yield. And as this is the time they start to pack on the oil, if you go too early, you're going to ruin that too. So patience crucial. Just make sure you're only a day or two early. If you're a week or 10 days early, you're going to cost yourself a lot of money in a year you can't afford to do. So forget that calendar date. And don't forget that many of these rape crops were still flowering well into the middle and beyond the end of May. So don't go by calendar date in a year like this. Have a good representative look in those middle pods and make sure they actually are at 30% moisture or less, that the seeds in the middle pods are ready and that it is the right time to go. Just make sure it doesn't just look like it's ready from a farm track. There's still an awful lot of green seeds in these pods, whether that canopy is bleached or otherwise. And the bleaching caused by the heat and the sunshine of the last 10 days or so, you know, it can be very, very misleading in making you think they're further on than they are. And remember that glyphosate is not a desiccant. It just presses that fast forward button on the ripening process, evening up that canopy. It's going to take 2 or 3 weeks to do its job. So on that bombshell, let's see what the next 7 days bring.
Thanks, Sean. Coming up on the Farming Programme podcast, we'll see what the markets have done this week and what the weather's going to do after a visit to a Lincolnshire grass grower. How do they get it so green and weed-free?
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
This is the Farming Programme podcast. I'm Steve Orchard, and as someone who talks about growing things each week, I have to say I'm ashamed of my garden, especially the lawn. So the other day, I went to see how the professionals grow grass for the likes of golf courses, football pitches, and decent-looking back gardens. Alan Whiteley is the farm manager at Tiller's Turf, just west of Saxilby. Just take me through the process a little bit, because you're going to be growing this in a different way to a farmer, surely.
Definitely. We sort of take a field on and we cultivate it. We start off with a deep soil loosening with a flat lift subsoiler. A contractor comes in and ploughs it using a really heavy press, which consolidates the soil. We need a very fine, firm seedbed. We then take it on with our cultivators. We go in with a Vadastat carrier and a front guttler press. We'll do 2 passes to get it very firm and level. We'll then go on and we'll go in with our Dalbo roller max, which starts to consolidate it and fine up the seedbed. After 4 passes with that, it'll have an application of nitrogen and potash in the seedbed, and then we're ready for sowing the seeds. Now, we don't use a normal corn drill, which we'd use on an arable farm. We've got a modified seed drill, which actually has spreader plates. It has different distribution in the system. We put very high seed rates on to achieve a thick, dense crop quickly. So that's the secret to establishment. We'll use a herbicide to take out the broadleaf weeds, and then we start to manicure that grass, mowing it quite high for a start with a Fleischmann 10-metre plus rotary mower. We'll use that for as long as it takes to sort of get it established and get the density build up, and then we'll try and take it on with the cylinder mowers. A cylinder mower thickens the crop up a lot quicker. We get that density which everybody wants on their lawns and on their pitches. And the machine now in the field is what we call our V mower. There's 23 Ransom cutting heads on this machine, and it's taking a 16 metre wide swath at a time.
Now, this is the mower that's approaching us at the moment, 16 metres wide from one side to the other. That is a big piece of kit, isn't it?
It's a big piece of kit. Obviously, he's on his first round now, so we need a driver that can keep that out of the hedge bottoms. But once he's got that done, we've got GPS on the tractors, he can put the width of that machine into his GPS, and it'll track the field out in all the breeds across the field, and he doesn't have to worry about anything. Then he can press a button and that tractor will be guided across the field.
So it's basically like running a combine over a field.
It is, yeah. As all modern agricultural equipment now, we rely heavily on GPS. We're not so reliable on good drivers who can drive straight.
Alan, where we stood at the moment, to the non-expert like me, is like standing on a very nicely manicured golf fairway. How long has it taken to get to this state?
So to get this grass to this stage, we're probably looking at, this isn't quite a year old yet, so we look at lifting turf, 12 months just over plus to lift it, depends on what we have to do to it, soil type and the season. Obviously during drought conditions, we're heavily into irrigation, we run something like 16 pumps and 25 irrigation reels that are constantly trying to keep up with the watering. Obviously we don't want these grasses to turn brown and go off, as they wouldn't be saleable. And also during the growing period we're using fertilisers and promoting growth and encouraging that thickening up and density of the grass.
Tell me about the soil that you need. Does that need to be a special type of soil or just a certain consistency?
We need to be on free draining sandy soils, and that produces the best turf and the best quality of product for us. It is a battle keeping it watered in the summer, but you wouldn't be able to grow this sort of product on heavy clay soils.
Now obviously most farmers are growing grass for pasture, for grazing. Is there any tips that can be passed on from what you do?
I think we're probably growing for two different reasons, but we obviously promote growth, and we use biostimulants and various other products as all farmers try to get the best out of their crop. We're finding that products like sulfur and obviously your ammonium nitrate or ammonium sulfates, which are all general products used in grass production, are the most sort of beneficial to our crops, with a little bit of science and mystic megging between trying to make it all happen. But we all face similar challenges. During the winter we have to use fungicides because we can get fungal attacks with the humid, wet weather and that sort of thing. So we all have the same sort of battles as grass growers and cereal farmers, really.
So this has been down about a year now. It looks pretty lovely to me, but how much longer before this will be lifted?
We'll be into this crop this autumn, hopefully. So we'll be lifting in here, and this will be going, depending on what the quality it makes, but we could be going on to golf courses, housing and all manner of outlets at the end of the day,
And as far as the field's concerned, once you've lifted the crop, what happens to it again? Do we go for grass again, or is there a rotation?
In many cases there's a rotation. We usually take the fields for a two-year period. It gives us time to get a crop in and out. And some farmers want to use it as a break crop for their arable cropping, and others are quite happy for us to continue with grassing longer term agreements. So it's really up to the to our landlords and farmers that we work with in the area, and to come to an agreement that suits us both, really.
Thank you to Alan and the team at Tillers Turf for showing me how it's done. All you need to know is at tillersturf.co.uk. And next week, Baron Brug at Groundswell talking about grass growing for grazing and pasture.
The Farming Programme.
Market reports.
Starting as usual with livestock and from Louth Market auctioneer Ed Middleton. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Steve. This week, a typical June entry in the prime cattle this week, with a lot of vendors haymaking, with taking advantage of the warm weather. Trade slightly back, as it is nationally, but saying that, top price in the steers came from F. Wallace and Son of Biscothorpe at £1,663.03. And in the heifers, at J.E. Thirlby of Gainsborough at £1,655.90. Moving on to the sheep, this week we had an SQQ of 384.65 for the prime lambs, and an all-in average of £167.68, which makes us probably one of the best averages up and down the country for the Monday market. An absolutely fantastic show of lambs last week, hottest day of the year, and probably a scorcher of a trade. Top price pen this week in the lambs came from J.A. and R. Jackson of Osgoby, with their run of shallow bred lambs averaging £175.95. Top price in the pence per kilo came from Andrew Reed of Horncastle, which climbed to 421 pence per kilo for 42 kilo Charolais lambs, which averaged £172.92. WH Orion Sons of Horncastle averaged £180.57 for their run and topped at 183. Moving on to the ewes, a very steady entry this week of ewes with an average of £96.84. Joint top this week came from Carol Allison of Thorsway at £170 for a Beltex ewe and Charlotte Hammond of Spalding for a Dutch spotted ram at £170. A small entry of store lambs, first of the season, a real mix of native sort of bred lambs this week, which sold to £54 for J.H. Cartwright of North Kelsey. That concludes this week's market report. A reminder again, we've got store cattle this week. And as usual, prime cattle, cool cattle, and all classes of sheep. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Ed. How have the grain markets performed this week? Open Fields' Alice Killam. Morning, Alice.
Good morning, Steve. A little bounce for us all on Wednesday, with the market probably feeling that it dropped too much on Tuesday, and another decent day on Thursday, albeit on very thin volume. Understandable, with a key US report on its way Friday evening. The US wheat market is currently seeing some short covering. I'm not sure why we move up 3% on just one set of weekly export numbers. More likely, they're concerned of being caught on the wrong side of things on Friday. Remember also, it's month end, so this will have an effect also. Let's talk briefly about Friday. This is a stocks and an acreage report, which is released every quarter from the US. At the time of writing, we only have trade guesses, which would indicate a bearish report, perhaps. Look at the corn stocks and the acres, which are both expected to be higher. The funds will be trading these guess numbers, so if the published numbers differ, then that's when we could see a swing. Historically, the June report can move things around a little. One of the curveballs for the US crop will be the weather. The US is a big place, but the weather models for the next 10 days, again, we're focusing here on the cheapest commodity, corn, suggest that there is rain around, which will keep the bears happy. Like the weather in the UK though, these models are not always accurate. A change of tone to dry weather as we enter July would change the sentiment, and it's a change of sentiment that we are after. Jumping east to the Black Sea, Ukrainian grain exports may be lower for next season, but they're certainly not at the moment. Ukraine alone are reported to have exported 3.4 million tonnes, up from 3.1 million tonnes exported last year. For the moment, this is what the bears are looking at. It's cheap and it's available. If there is a problem down the line, we'll worry about that tomorrow. For us, not much has changed. If a rocky road is to be hit, then values will climb, and that's what we're all after. For now, and with us so close to harvest, I think we should stick to the following. Old crop, if you need to create room for new crop, just keep trading. If you're able to hold it, then the market is telling you to do so, with good carries into new crop. Just make sure that you take advantage of the carry by making a sale. New crop, harvest is clearly going to be an issue, with export values way adrift at current numbers. With the carry into September or October, try and hold on to what you can. Tuck it away for a better day. And when we start, sample everything thoroughly. I expect premiums for everything to remain, so maximise premiums wherever possible. Some guide prices for this week, circa Friday morning. Feed wheat, July, 170 to 180. September, 185 to 195. November, 190 to 200. With Group 1 milling premiums still holding between £60 and £70. Feed barley, September, 150 to 160, and November, 155 to 165. All seed rape, September, 375 to 385, November, 380 to 390, and May, 390 to 400. As usual, please do call for firm values.
Thanks, Alice.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
A little cooler and cloudier this week, starting quite calm, but the wind picks up from midweek from the southwest and around 20 miles per hour, but gusting into the 30s. Patchy sun and occasional light rain, but mostly dry this week, highs in the upper teens Celsius. Next week, we'll talk silicon, potatoes and a new fungicide, and all the week in agriculture on the Farming Programme podcast. And I mentioned earlier a new way to listen. Rayo is our new app, which lets you listen to Hits Radio, all our sister stations with every conceivable type of music, features, playlist to suit your mood, and the Farming Programme. pause, rewind, listen whenever you want, and listen again if you miss something important to you. Just search Farming. So download the Rayo app, that's R-A-Y-O from the App Store. It's totally free and very clever, but simple to use. So until next Sunday, or whenever you want on Rayo and Podcast, I'm Steve Orchard. Have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. BSI ISO 9001 accredited.